Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. And the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on drought in America when we come back. You know, if you're living on a lot, just 50 by 100 feet with 2,000 square foot house on it, you've got space left over for six raised beds that contain about 2,400 square feet. Now that's called French intensive culture. 2,400 square feet is enough space to grow all of the food that a family of five or six will eat in an entire year. And you can do that in the middle of the city as easily as you can out in the country. The idea that you're trapped in the city and you can't provide for yourself and your family because of space limitations is a fiction. You don't need extra cash to buy a tractor, a plow, or a harrow. A shovel and a rake and a hoe is more in line with what you need for an urban French intensive culture farm. We don't need lots of acres, combines, or price supports. What we need are pruners, newspaper for mulch, and open pollinated seed. So if you've got 2,400 square feet or a backyard big enough for a decent garden, you can feed your whole family on your own ground, on your own land. Now, we have a seed package designed to answer your questions with the most economical and practical solutions to your long-term food needs. And it has space-saving vegetables, so you need less land, less fertilizer, less water, less mulch, and less work. And it's been designed with immediate food availability. Did you know you're only 28 days from seed to salad? 28 days. And it has flowers to attract wild pollinators because of the loss of our honeybee population to chemical sprays and disease. And we've designed this with a long harvest season to allow for fresh vegetables longer and to reduce stress by not making you can, dry, or store everything all at once. And you won't need any specialized tools. As I said, just a rake, a hoe, and a shovel, plus a supply of newspaper. Mulch is enough to plant and raise every seed in this package. And a pair of clippers and a paring knife is all you need to harvest it. Now, this package is designed with all of the non-hybrid, non-genetically modified seeds, and it can feed a family of six forever. You know, if you're sensible and you save your seeds from year to year. So if you'd like more information on this 100 variety seed package, why don't you call us here at the law school? The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. All right, let's talk about drought in America. We've been on this drought subject over here for the last two or three programs. We're talking about the Colorado and the Missouri River systems, which is now affecting, along with the three or four states down on the Gulf Coast, more than 40% of the states in the Union have been struck by this Bible prophecy, "I will give you rain in due season." And I mean, we've been struck hard. That Hurricane Katrina, along with Hurricane Rita, which hit Texas, were two of the body blows that we have received that we probably will not recover from. Those are economic hits. They're talking $500 billion for those two hurricanes. That's not rain in due season. Then we have a more sinister, a longer-term problem called drought. Hurricanes like Katrina destroying a city like New Orleans is a headline grabber. But a very similar event is taking place in 19 states in the Union, and it's not getting any news coverage at all. It'll be just as devastating as what happened in New Orleans, but it's going to take a longer period of time, and it's going to affect a lot more people. About 10 million people. Along the Gulf Coast, I think it probably affected a million or 2 million. This drought is going to affect about 10 million. And the ripple effect that goes through the economy is what's going to be the death knell. It's the ripple effect. You see, we're sitting here like I am behind my desk, and I'm saying, well, you know, too bad for you ranchers out there in Colorado, and you're a little short of water. Well, okay, we'll buy our beef from Argentina. I mentioned to you in the last program that water is coming across the Continental Divide onto the east slope from the west slope, and there's a competition going on for the dwindling supply of water, which is going to our cities and our suburbs over here to water your lawns, boys and girls, as you comfortably work in those office buildings in downtown Denver or downtown Colorado Springs. Your lifestyle, your way of life is dependent upon that water, which is dwindling. It's not just the rancher that had to cut his herd down from 180 to 65. It's coming to a city near you, where you live. And it's not just out in the West either. You see, we're all tied together here, whether we like it or not. We're all tied together. And the people up in Seattle, when they're working and they're making things, they're selling those things. They're selling their apples up in Washington, all over the country. And boys and girls, we're not buying Washington apples when we're scrambling to make our house payments. Or we're not going to buy as many Washington apples when we're scrambling to make our house payments. Or when we lose our job because there's cutbacks. Not just from outsourcing, but cutbacks because of this drought. See, this drought has a slow, insidious event. It's not something that's dramatic that we can photograph. You know, you go out here and you photograph the drought. What are you going to see? You go down to New Orleans and you photograph the Ninth Ward, and boy, you can get people's adrenaline flowing. But the economic consequences are the same with the drought as it was with the flood. It's just that the flood is over in a couple of days and it's done. Now we can get back to rebuilding. You can see the devastation and the destruction. Now, God has used drought to destroy nations and empires and civilizations in the past. That's right. Nations, empires, and civilizations have been destroyed in the past by this drought. If I got a little story here on this Anasazi or Anasazi Indians, I thought I had a page right here. Chaco Canyon, here it is right here. Collapse of Chaco Canyon. 1,000 years ago in what is now the American Southwest, the Anasazi, a Navajo word meaning ancient ones or possibly ancient enemies, built dramatic adobe dwellings or pueblos. Chaco Canyon was the center of Anasazi civilization, and its many large pueblos probably serving as administrative and ceremonial centers for a widespread population throughout the southwestern United States. How the Anasazi lived. The Pueblo Bonito, one of the largest of the Chaco Canyon pueblos, is a good example of how the Anasazi lived. Pueblo Bonito rose 4 to 5 stories high. It's an astounding achievement for the time. Rooms surrounded a central plaza, and throughout the settlement were a number of kivas, meeting places that served a ceremonial purpose. The total population of Pueblo Bonito was around 1,200 people at its height. Surrounding the pueblo were a number of smaller dwellings and structures. Numerous communities looked to Chaco Canyon for political and religious guidance. After the 6th century AD, the Anasazi of Chaco Canyon and other settlements abandoned hunting and gathering in favor of cultivating crops such as maize. To grow maize, they needed rain, but the area was dry and rain was sporadic. What rain did fall was hoarded and used sparingly and effectively. Evidence of dams, canals, and other water control features found by archaeologists shows the importance of water to the Anasazi civilization. But from the 12th to the 13th centuries, many of the pueblos in Chaco Canyon were abandoned. So what caused the people to leave the pueblos, the centers of Anasazi society? One Pueblo at Sand Canyon can provide clues. Archaeologists found evidence that when Sand Canyon was finally abandoned in the 13th century, the kivas were burned. Kivas were sacred ceremonial places. They would not have been systematically burned without a cause. Many archaeologists believe today that the kivas were ceremonially burned as a way to close the kivas when the people left. The Anasazi very likely did this because they never intended to return. Another important clue is that at Sand Canyon, people left almost all of their possessions rather than taking them with them. The Anasazi likely had a long and difficult journey ahead of them. Let me pause right here and point something out to you. Back in the drought in the 1930s, not only did we have an economic calamity, but the economic calamity was exacerbated by a natural calamity, the drought in the Midwest. The drought in the Midwest. Now just picture this. The people living in the Dust Bowl states of Kansas and Oklahoma, North and South Dakota, had to leave. They packed up their stuff and they moved out to California, Washington, and Oregon. Just like the Anasazis. That drought forced them off of the land. They had to leave. Now you can say, well, yeah, but the land came back and you know, there are people living there today. Yeah, that's true. And the land came back. And there are people living down in Arizona, New Mexico, and Washington, Oregon, and California today. But the Anasazi aren't. It destroyed their civilization. They're gone. And that's what we're facing here. The destruction of our civilization. And we're going to be gone. Those people that lived there in the 1920s and 30s in the Midwest were gone. They were displaced. Just like the people in New Orleans and Biloxi have been displaced. They're scattered all over the United States of America as a result of a natural calamity. And I just want to bring to your attention that this is the tip of the iceberg. You know, this God over here now says, you've been giving me the finger for a long time over here, boys and girls, and there's a payday coming. Now, he told us that he's going to lean on us a little bit. He's not going to drive us out of here all in one fell swoop. He's not going to destroy us, you know, in one day. It takes a little time. Now, since about 1950, we Americans reached the zenith of our political and economic power about 1950. About 50 years ago or so. And we've been on a slippery slope sliding downhill ever since. We got off on a bad track about 1913 or 14 with this Federal Reserve. We got off on a bad track back in 1933 when we elected a guy named Franklin Roosevelt, who introduced us to the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. We have the federal government now, a big, monstrous government over here, dictating to us when to come in, when to go out, and what to do in between. That's not an accident, boys and girls. That's a curse. That's a penalty that we're paying over here. It's the results. It's payback. It's the results of making some bad decisions. Now, you know, most Americans today, if you ask them, well, what do you think about OSHA and the EPA and the State Tax Commission and the income tax? And most Americans are pretty happy with the status quo. They're pretty happy with the program just the way it is. I don't have much hope that there's going to be any dramatic change in America or change in Americans' activities or attitudes toward communism or toward the Ten Commandments, for that matter. But I thought I'd bring it to your attention because there might be 100,000, 200,000, maybe even 300,000 people in this country. You know, old Elijah said, I'm the last man in Israel to practice this law. And Big Mike said to him, no, I have reserved 7,000 in this nation that have not bowed their knee to Baal. Now, most Americans bow their knee to Baal, and they worship the sun. They're sun worshippers, as evidenced every Easter when they get up in the morning and go out and worship the sun as it rises. That's Easter sunrise service. It's nothing new. We've been sun worshippers for 3,000 years. We Israelites prefer worshiping the sun than we prefer worshiping the creator of the universe, the God of Abraham. But then that's another story for another day. But in spite of that pagan sun worship, etc., you know, God has blessed us here with the country. Our pilgrim forefathers, you know, when they came over here, they practiced a lot of the law. They didn't practice all of it, but they practiced a whole lot more than we do today. And we got a whole lot better result as a result of it. But over the past 50 years, we see here in America that we've got mounting problems, international problems, war problems, debt problems, social problems. We get riots in our cities, you know, and we've got race problems in the country, and we didn't have these kind of problems in times past, and the nation flourished, and the problems are becoming greater and greater and worser as time progresses along. Now, the Anasazi over here were destroyed from off of the land because of their wickedness. God told us that. He said, I'm not destroying these people from off the land because of your righteousness. I'm destroying these people from off the land because of their wickedness. And I'm going to give you this land over here. In Deuteronomy chapter 9, verse 5, he says, not for your righteousness or for the uprightness of your heart dost thou go in to possess their land, but for the wickedness of these nations. The Eternal, your God, does drive them out from before you, and that he may perform the word which he swore unto your fathers Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. So understand, therefore, you Americans and Canadians and Australians, that the Eternal, your God, gives you not this good land to possess it for your righteousness, because you're a stiff-necked bunch. Called a stiff-necked. That's in Deuteronomy 9, if you want to look that up, see if I'm lying to you. You know, Deuteronomy 9, verse 5, 6, and 7. The Anasazi Indians over here were destroyed from off the land because of their wickedness, and it was given to us. And the first guys that came in to colonize it were the Spanish. Fellow Israelites, by the way. They came in, and of course they were Catholic Baal worshippers, you know. I mean, hell, they came over here with their pagan practices, but you know, they were a little better than the guys that were on the ground. It's just that they got worse and worse, and pretty soon then the Protestants came in, threw the Catholics out. And now the Protestants over here, they got a little worse and worse, and we went through the Civil War over here, another little punishment for us. And then from that point on, it's been kind of downhill, because we get worse and worse as time progresses. We don't get better and better. We don't practice more and more of the law. We practice less and less of it. I've mentioned this before, but let me mention it to you again. There are 133 titles of law here in the Scripture. 133 subject matters of law in the Scripture. And out of that 133, they're divided into 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments. And if you take a look at the 133 basic laws, like thou shalt not commit adultery, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not kill. If you take a look at the basic laws, there's a number of statutes that regulate adultery, a number of statutes that regulate theft, a number of statutes that regulate killing. So we have 759. But take 133. Let's just do this. 759 divided by 133 gives you about 5.7 statutes for each law that's in the Scripture. Out of 133, there's about 6 statutes that regulate it. Now listen to this. You take a look at a subject matter called Christmas. It's strictly prohibited in Jeremiah 6, or 10, rather, 1 through 6. Christmas. Prohibited in the Bible. It's a pagan practice. Now, most Americans practice Christmas. If we don't practice Christmas, then we practice Hanukkah or something else. These pagan practices, which are prohibited in the Scripture that we practice here, is a violation of one of those 133 laws. How many of those 133 do we violate? 82. What percentage is that? Let's just try it. 82 as a percentage of 133. 61%. So we Americans violate 61% of the law of God out of hand. I mean, we just give them the finger, and that's the end of that argument. We are still practicing 51 laws, or, you know, about 39%. As a result of that, we're in the process of being destroyed from off the land. Now, that's just speaking of Americans, but I don't think you Canadians, Australians, or New Zealanders are very far behind us. I'll just put that out for your consideration. Now, some laws that we still practice, like blood, you know, the blood law, we in our country, we still bleed our animals. In Mexico, they strangle them. In this country, we shoot them in the head, and then we cut their throats, and we bleed them. That's what God instructed us to do. You shall not eat the blood thereof. So in order for us to violate that law, which we do, we use blood transfusions, and we mainline human blood from person to person. Big business in this country. $180 a pint. Red Cross goes out here and collects it regularly, and you people shoot it up directly. And every time you get a blood transfusion, you're in violation of Leviticus 7, 26, and 27. Fat. We put fat in our hamburger. 30%. You go to McDonald's to eat a fat burger. That violates Leviticus 3, verse 17. You shall eat no manner of blood or fat. And we do that in this country as a routine. In fact, by law, we put 30% fat into our hamburger. It's the law. Just, you know, if God told you to stand up, you'd sit down. And if he told you to sit down, you'd stand up. Now, the reason I bring this to your attention is that this drought that we're beginning to experience here, and these hurricanes, I saw a piece the other day, I'll tell you about these hurricanes. Of course, the secular people, they tell you, the scientific people, they tell you, well, see, this is just nonsense, this religious nonsense. You don't need to worry about the Ten Commandments and God. There is no such thing. We evolved from green slime. And these events transpire. Now, they tell us that the world is warming up and that this global warming is caused by the activities of men. It's the activities of our power plants and our industrial society, the burning of fossil fuels in our automobiles and so on. I'm going, okay. I wouldn't deny that. I saw some pictures the other day. The Arctic ice cap is shrunk by about 20%. And the Greenland ice cap is melting off pretty rapidly. And I saw a big piece of ice broke off of the Rice or the Ross ice shelf down in Antarctica the other day. Global warming, I think, is going on. I think everybody's in agreement. It's the cause. Is it caused by CO2? Is it caused by something else? Has anybody ever thought that maybe the creator of the universe? I mean, just picture this. A guy that says he's powerful enough to create the entire universe, do you think he could raise the temperature of the Earth by 2 degrees? Now, it's a real stretch for most people's imagination to believe that this guy could create the entire universe. It's worse than that. He said, I did it in 6 days. It isn't like it took him, you know, 3,000 years or 300,000 or 30 billion years to do it. He said, I did it in 6 days. That really just blows everybody away, and they can't quite figure that out. I can't do it, and so surely he can't. But I got to thinking about that, and I said, you know, if this guy's, you know, just halfway civil, just halfway got his head screwed on straight, this God over here, a guy that could create the whole universe in 6 days, I think, could raise the temperature of the Earth by 2 degrees in 25 or 30 years. I think if he put his mind to it, he might be able to do that. Now, here's the kicker. The meteorologists are telling us now that if the temperature keeps rising in the oceans, you know, you just raise the temperature of the ocean. And this is where that Hurricane Katrina came from. The Gulf of Mexico was 6 degrees warmer than it's been in years past. The temperature of the water in the Gulf of Mexico last year was 6 degrees warmer than normal. And that's what causes the ferocity of these hurricanes. They really build on that warm water in the Gulf of Mexico. And some meteorologist was on the radio the other day, or on TV, I think it was, and I was watching this news. I forgot exactly what program it was now, but he said, we can expect hurricanes stronger in the future, stronger than Rita and Katrina. Well, that ought to give you something to really jump up and down about, because as global warming continues, the oceans are going to get warmer. They're going to spawn even more deadly hurricanes. And, of course, then some guy comes along and says, well, it's just a cycle, you know. It's been going on like this for thousands of years. And yeah, it's true. And you can go back in the tree rings and you can look at the Anasazi Indians that God said, I'm going to destroy those suckers from off the land because of their wickedness. Now, when you come in and occupy their land, don't think that you're occupying their land because of your righteousness, because you're a bunch of wicked suckers also. And he goes on, remember, I read this to you yesterday in Deuteronomy chapter 4. He says, I call heaven and earth to witness against you this day that you shall soon utterly perish from off the land whereunto you go over Jordan to possess it. And you shall not prolong your days upon it, but you shall utterly be destroyed. And that's what makes me a little suspicious, you know, about this drought going on out here in the West. I take a look at the Anasazi Indians, and they're not the only ones. I mean, I can go back through history and I can pull out five or six of these events that have occurred in past history. And I just picked these Anasazis because it happened to be on the web the other day. And I says, oh, yeah, I remember those guys down there. There's another gang of Indians down here at a place called Casa Grande, Arizona. Casa Grande. And out in this desert down around, it's between Phoenix and Tucson. And there's irrigation canals out there. I mean, these people weren't dummies. I mean, these people had irrigation canals that stretched for miles and miles across the desert. They had quite a little civilization going out there. And it just disappeared. Gone. I remember 30 years ago, down in Casa Grande, Arizona, they were down, back in the 30s, I guess, is what they told me. Back in the 30s, they drilled 300 feet for water. By 1970, they were down to 3,000 feet. And the other day, somebody said they were down 6,000 feet drilling, pumping water out of the ground down there in Casa Grande, Arizona. Boys and girls, the Ogla Ogla Aquifer that stretches from the Texas Panhandle up through North and South Dakota. Hey, 80% of the water has already been pumped out of that. Did you know that? You not only have a problem here with the Missouri River and the Colorado River, you've got a problem with your aquifers. In North Texas, the aquifer is dry and the ground has gone back to its dry land farm use. So they were irrigating that, you know, 50 years ago. Then the thing went dry. Go down to Amarillo and down on down through there, and you're going to find out that, hey, listen, the aquifers are going dry in this country. And then we got pollution. You get out there to the north front, or the east front, I guess they call that, in Denver, and up and down the Front Range over there, you have an aquifer over there, and you got to producing nuclear weapons up north of Denver over there and destroyed your aquifer. The water up there isn't fit to drink. So either it's going dry or you polluted it with nuclear waste, or it's going dry because it's not raining and it's not snowing over here. Now, you can sit there and say, well, it's not God, it's just time and chance. Well, okay, whatever it is, it's not good, is it? I mean, nobody's running around here saying that global warming is our good friend. And they tell us, there's another kicker over here, that over the next 100 years, if it goes on that long, over the next 100 years, you're going to see a 3-foot rise in the oceans if the temperature rises one more degree. Now, it's already risen 1 degree. They're talking about over the next 10 or 15 years, temperatures, Earth, you know, worldwide, raising one more degree. That 2 degrees raise in temperature is going to melt off the polar ice cap, Greenland, and Antarctica. 2 degrees. I was amazed that only 2 degrees would melt all that ice. That's your average temperature worldwide. And evidently it's coming, boys and girls. And if you thought that maybe the creator of the universe is using this global warming over here to punish us, think maybe this might be Matthew 24 coming to fruition. Hey, let me give you a reminder here, and we'll be back with more on the drought in America right after this. You're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, please go to our homeschooling webpage on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. And all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, economics, history, health, news, and current events 7 days a week. And the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just call the Law School and ask for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. Hey, while I'm on the subject here of drought, let me tell you a little story. I found another seed company over here. If you got a pen and paper, write this down. Called Fedco Seeds. Fedco, F-E-D-C-O. They produce and sell open pollinated seeds. I told you about this guy up here in Mansfield. Let me tell you about Fedco Seeds. Their address is P.O. Box 520, Waterville, Maine. Can anything good come out of Maine? Yes. Waterville, Maine. 04903. The zip code 04903. Open pollinated seeds. No GMOs there. Telephone number is 207-873-7333. Again, that's 207-873-7333. Now, the reason I bring that to your attention is that if we're going into drought, or if you're going into upset weather, you need a food storage program. In fact, remember this old story back in the Old Testament about a guy named Joseph who stockpiled food for 7 years and then fed it out over the next seven? That was one of those kind of deals that I think we're facing here with the Great Tribulation, except that perhaps instead of 7 year supply, you just need about a 3.5 year supply. So I recommend to all of our students that you have a 4 year supply. But in addition to that, you ought to have seeds available that you can grow your own. That's why I mentioned to you in this program that, you know, if you've just got a lot, you're living in Cleveland, Ohio, and your lot's 50 by 100 feet, 5,000 square feet. You got a 2,000-foot house on it. Well, then you got 3,000 more square feet. Well, 2,400 square feet will feed a family of six with French intensive culture. All you need is some seed to go with it. Now, the Fedco people over here, these open pollinated seeds, they're called heirloom seeds, are hard to come by. 20 years ago, they were everywhere. Today, they're hard to come by. I just got a piece out of the International Forecaster this week that Monsanto, you know those good folks at Monsanto over here in St. Louis, have come up with another GMO product called alfalfa. Yeah. So now I've got to look at my alfalfa. Now you see, we're organic farmers here, and we produce organic milk, meat, butter, eggs, etc. And we feed alfalfa pellets to our cows, along with, you know, hay and pasture. Now I find out that Monsanto is in the process of cornering the market on alfalfa. There will be no GMO-free alfalfa here very shortly. Just thought you'd like to hear that and make your day. So I'm not going to be feeding alfalfa very much longer. I got to start looking now for another feed to be feeding my cows, so I can keep them off of that GMO. Well, the Fedco people have taken the pledge to do that. So that's why I'm recommending this Fedco Seeds. Now, you want to write this number down. If you don't have it down, you can call the law school. I guess we'd tell you what it is, but it's Post Office Box 520, Waterville, Maine, 04903. Their telephone number, 207-873-7333. Again, that's area code 207-873-7333. Call Fedco Seeds. I'll tell you that name and address as we progress along here a time or two. Remember these Anasazi Indians? That's what we were talking about here when we took our break. Now, why would these Anasazis leave, especially for good? Why would they potentially leave their pueblos that had taken them decades to construct? Well, scientists have found one possible answer by looking at the tree rings. It's a study called dendrochronology. In the Sand Canyon area, in the period between 1125 and 1180, very little rain fell in the region. Now, let's count that up. 1125 to 1180, very little rain fell in the region. After 1180, rainfall briefly returned to normal. From 1270 to 1274, there was another long drought, followed by another period of normal rainfall. In 1275, yet another drought began. This one lasted 14 years. Boys and girls, listen to this. 1125 to 1180. That's more than just 5 or 10 years. We're not talking about a 5-year drought here. We're talking about 50-plus years of drought. And we're talking about 3 droughts, one after another. Which is another reason why I'm suspicious about this thing of God, you know, giving us rain in due season and controlling the weather. A God that's able to give you rain when you need it has to be able to control the weather. Just think about it. If I could come to you and say, I will give you rain in due season, and you're going to have all these neat benefits that come from it. Let me run this one by you here. Leviticus 26. I'll just read you the story yourself, and you put this together. It says to me that this guy controls the weather, and this guy that can control the weather over here, he can make it tough on you, or he can make it pretty good on you. He says, if you walk in my statutes and keep my commandments, I'll give you rain in due season, the land shall yield her increase, the trees of the field shall yield their fruit. Your threshing shall reach to the vintage shall reach to the sowing time. You shall eat your bread to the full and dwell in your land safely. Hey, these Anasazis over here got 55 years of drought and drove them off the land. Same thing happened in Casa Grande, Arizona. Drought came down there. These people are living in drought conditions. We Americans moved into and started colonizing Arizona. Hell, we knew it was a desert. We knew that Arizona was in drought conditions. It's a drought area. It's a desert. And yet people by the millions have moved in there. Now, at the very same time that we're moving all these people in and building all these subdivisions, and we're just doing all these neat things, we are saying to ourselves, we're getting 15 million acre feet a year down the Colorado River. And all of a sudden, it drops off by a third. Now it's down by two-thirds. This is the lowest that the Colorado River has run in more than 1,000 years. This isn't an ordinary drought that we're talking about like the 1930s, where it dropped off by a third, it's dropped off by two-thirds. The reservoirs are half full. If this goes on for 5 more years, they'll be empty. Now, boys and girls, Phoenix is a big, big city. Now, can you imagine Phoenix and Tucson, Arizona being vacated? Can you imagine Los Angeles, California without water? I know, we'll get down to water rationing and we'll get down to emergency conditions. Boys and girls, emergency conditioning and water rationing is not good for the economy. That's not what builds subdivisions. That's not what employs construction workers building houses and buildings. You know, the people moving into Phoenix, the increase in population, the construction of houses, the building of big buildings, the infrastructure that's being created creates jobs. That's what your economy is all about. That's what we all rely upon for these jobs that George Bush keeps talking about. Now, you take those jobs, depend upon water, boys and girls, and the water is being shut off. And, of course, the question arises, is this just happenstance, or is there a way that we could know about it? I'm sitting here suggesting that, hey, I think maybe God himself is getting ticked off at us and is shutting off the water. Now, there's a simple solution. All you got to do is go back to practicing the Ten Commandments. You know, one of two things is going to happen. You go back to practicing the Ten Commandments and the drought gets worse. Well, then you can come back and say, well, okay, practicing the Ten Commandments does not give us rain in due season. The Bible lied to us. On the other hand, if we practice the Ten Commandments and the water table came back up and the reservoirs started filling back up and the snow came back and the river started running, we'd say, well, maybe there's something to this Ten Commandment thing. Furthermore, if we just quit committing adultery over here, what's it going to cost us? A little fun and relaxation on the weekend down at Flo's place? I mean, come on. What if we use gold and silver coin instead of Federal Reserve notes? Is that going to kill us? I mean, we used them in years past. Seemed to get by pretty well. Built the wealthiest, most powerful nation in the world on gold and silver coin. Didn't seem to hurt us when we were building this infrastructure. Seems like that all the debt and all the problems came with paper money after 1914 to me. And how about bearing false witness against your neighbor? Didn't seem like such a bad thing to me to stop lying about your neighbor. You know, just thought I'd throw that out there for your consideration. Now, the cycle of drought began, the Anasazi civilization was at its height. Communities were densely populated. Even with good rains, the Anasazi were using their land to its limits. Without rain, it was impossible to grow enough food to support the population. Isn't that where we're at right now? Remember, I read to you this article, I think, on the program one of this series. If normal rains came back tomorrow, Lake Mead and Lake Powell will never fill up again. Never. If the flow comes back to its mean average of 15 million acre feet a year, why is that? Well, because of the population growth in Phoenix and Las Vegas and Tucson and all the other little towns along the way. Population growth and the claim on that water is going to use it all up. The two lakes are half full now and they're never going to go above half full, even if rain came back to normal. Now, boys and girls, 15 million acre feet a year isn't enough. We need 30 million. And we need a God over here that's going to supply us with 30 million acre feet of water running down the Colorado River. Same thing with the Missouri River. We need a God over here that gives us snow in the wintertime, and he needs to give us twice as much snow so that we'll have twice as much water running down the Missouri River like it was back in the days of Lewis and Clark. Now, the reports that we got from Lewis and Clark told us how much water was running down the river. Everything was great. Hell, things were great in 1900. Things were great in 1953. But boys and girls, things aren't great in 2005, 2006. So notice here that the height of their population, widespread famine occurred. People left the area in large numbers to join other Pueblo peoples in the south and east. They abandoned Chaco Canyon Pueblos and later the smaller communities that surrounded them. The Anasazi civilization began a long period of migration and decline. I think we're going to read that the American civilization began a long period of migration and decline after these years of drought and famine. I think that's what you're going to read in history in the future. It's what we saw in the 1930s. A series of droughts comes along to destroy this people over a period of time. Now, if we could get rain in due season, that means that we would be getting more and more rain, not less and less. To do that, you've got to practice your half of the contract. And if we don't practice our half of the contract, God doesn't practice his half of the contract. I think that's what we're saying here. Our God is simply not performing his end of the contract. And I got to sit here and say, well, there's no reason for him to. Now, remember this lawyer back here. We're talking about this lawyer who is... What did I do with that document now? Just bear with me here, boys and girls. Remember this lawyer, Cazier, C-A-Z-I-E-R, and his law partner do business over here in Granby, Colorado. He says, well, more of the potential cases brewing on the western side of the mountains involving the cities on the eastern side, or the Front Range, Cazier said Denver and its growing suburbs are constantly on the prowl for more water, a search that's becoming more difficult. The most critical water is right up here at the top, he said. Denver controls what water is released into the river on this side. That leaves people on the west looking to reach agreements with Denver. We're getting less and less water because more of it is capable of going over to the east side. We're having growth over here now, and there's not a whole lot of extra water available. It sounds like a local struggle, but Cazier said moving more water over the mountains to the eastern side affects the entire river because when Denver takes it, it's 100% gone. It's all consumptive over there. On this side, there are return flows, water that we put back into the river. It's a tough one, he said, glancing at a map of the river's upper basin. If we're not getting water up here, we're not going to be getting water down there sooner or later. All right, so there's a fight over the dwindling means of survival. That's what it boils down to. A fight over the dwindling means of survival. Now, at this moment in time, you know, when you're sitting in Seattle, Washington, or Los Angeles, California, and you're happy and fat, and you're working every day, you got a job, and everything's going great. But are you looking into the future, 5, 10, 15 years? Because when water is shut off in Phoenix, Arizona, you people are going to be migrating out of Phoenix, Arizona, just like the people were migrating out of Oklahoma and Kansas in the Dust Bowl. Your property values at $600,000 and $300,000 houses in Phoenix, Arizona will be abandoned because they will be valueless. Now that's the results of drought. In a flood, like you see down in New Orleans, your house is destroyed right in front of your eyeballs, and you can see the mud on the carpet in the living room. And just picture the agony that those people are going through. I said that's payback for Mardi Gras. I noticed this year that you got Mardi Gras going full swing down there. It's because it's worth $200 million to you. I don't know, sounds like false economics to me, false economy. You got a $500 billion hit down there. That's what the president tells us, that they're going to need $500 billion. My God, that's a half a trillion. you know, 500 billion here and 500 billion there, and pretty soon we'll be talking about real money, as old Everett Dirksen used to say. Billion here and a billion there, and pretty soon, you know, you're talking about real money. And that's when money had a little more value to it. And then you want to go down there and practice that same Mardi Gras again for $200 million? Yeah, I'd be a little wary of the next hurricane season. Now, I'm not saying there's going to be more hurricanes down there to destroy New Orleans next year or the year after. I'm not a prophet. I tried that a couple of times, and that didn't work well for me. So God doesn't talk to me, and I don't know any more about it than you do. But I'm not brain dead. I can see here in the Scripture. I can read USA Today. I can see that Americans don't practice the Ten Commandments. I can see here that he told us, you better practice my law. You better practice these Ten Commandments. You do that, I'll give you rain in due season. I'll make the Colorado River flow. I'll give you enough water on the Missouri River that you can run your barges on it. And you can release water and keep your fish going, and you can practice the ecology. There's six groups that are vying for water along these rivers. And I'll take care of all these needs for you, and you'll practice my law. You don't do that, and I'm going to shut it off. I'm not going to give you rain in due season. I'm just a reporter here, boys and girls. Now, you've got a creek to the river story here. Listen to this. He said, at the headwaters of the Colorado River in the high Rockies, the water is all virgin flow, runoff from the snow that falls all winter. The Colorado begins in a remote part of the Never Summer Range, fed at first by uncountable little streams and rivulets that finally take form as not much more than a creek. Nearly 2 miles above sea level, above even the tree line, you can wade across the Colorado. Stand still long enough, and you can hear all the little streams trickling down. The water's cold and clear. Nothing like the angry red rapids as the more mature river leaves the state. In the Kunichi Valley, the fledgling river winds through alpine meadows, flanked by thick pine forests and peaks that remain snow-capped well into July. Huge herds of elk wander the valley, grazing on the grasses and drinking from the water. Up here, when it snows, there's water in the river. When there's less snow, there's less water. There are no huge reservoirs to make up the difference, no wide tributaries to boost the flow. At the beginning of July, the Colorado was flowing at 311 cubic feet a second near Kremling. Normal flow is 1,370 cubic feet a second. Windy Gap Reservoir east of Kremling can provide 55,000 acre feet of water in a year. In 2003, it was good for 327 acre feet. Now, that's just a little reservoir. But just take a look. Here in the very high, up in the very very top of the mountains, where it should be running nearly 1,400 cubic feet a second, it's running 300 cubic feet a second. Hey, people in New Jersey are saying, well, that's not our problem. Okay, boys and girls, the Katrina didn't hit you directly, but Katrina is your problem, just like it's my problem. And we all get hit because we're all members of the economy, whether we want to be or not. And customers that come to this law school here are people that depend upon the Colorado River and the Missouri River. Those are people, you know, I have students that come here from Biloxi, Mississippi, and people that come here to this school from New Orleans. And those people from Biloxi and New Orleans aren't coming here to school. They haven't even got a house to live in. And people that are on the Colorado and on the Missouri rivers and that are fighting wildfires in North Texas and Oklahoma aren't coming to school because they've got their houses burning down. They've got economic problems. It affects me. It affects you. It affects everybody in the country. And it affects everybody in the country because our God over here is affecting us. Now, that's my take on it. So I'll give you my opinion. That's my take on it. And then the wilder we get, and then the more we drift away from, the less of the law we practice, the worse it's going to get. which tells me that you ought to be preparing for the worst, which is why I suggested that you consider Fedco seeds. Now, I don't have any great delusions here. I don't think that the people of America are going to stop Mardi Gras in New Orleans, or that the people out in Colorado or along these rivers over here are going to change and start practicing the Ten Commandments in the morning, or that there's some evangelist coming along here going to set up a tent camp riot someplace, and you people are all going to give your hearts to Jesus and repent in sackcloth and ashes and make everything better again. Like granny kissing your hurt, and it's going to go away. I don't think that's going to happen. I think the United States of America, just like the Anasazi Indians, and just like the Romans and the Greeks and the Babylonians and the Assyrians and the Egyptians and every civilization and empire that has ever gone on before us, is going to be destroyed. And that includes you Canadians, Australians, and New Zealanders right along with us. And I hope the guy that wrote me the letter and said, God would never do that to the United States of America. The nation that performs about 2.5 million abortions a year, God would never do that to the United States of America. The nation that has 300 million people, they tell us by October of this year, will have crossed the 300 million population mark. The nation with 300 million people and 300 million Sabbath breakers, he'd never do that to the United States of America. I'm not so sure. Let me tell you about Fedco seeds again. I think you probably would want to have a supply of seed on hand. And you can get it from Fedco Seeds, P.O. Box 520, Waterville, Maine, 04903. Get the name and address down. Ask them for their catalog. Every time I find one of these seed companies, and there's not many of them around, that still practices open pollinated seeds, they're still shunning genetically modified seed, I'm going to tell you about it. So write it down. You got another one here, Fedco Seeds. Get their catalog, P.O. Box 520, Waterville, Maine, 04903. Their phone number is 207-873-7333. That's 207-873-7333. All right, that'll tell you that story. I'm just about out of time. We'll have to leave it just about right here. We'll be back next time taking a look at this thing of drought in the United States of America. We're getting hit with a double whammy. We got nailed by Hurricane Katrina, but long before Hurricane Katrina, there's been a drought in this country building up. Half the storage capacity in our reservoirs is empty. 80% of our Ogla aquifer, the biggest in the nation, has now been pumped out. We got 20% left to go. Boys and girls, doesn't sound good to me. So let me give you a final reminder that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.